Stay a while. Stay forever.
Hello, I am Rob.
And I'm Rob.
And welcome to Impossible Mission, where we talk about some video game stuff here at the Geek Show. Now, this week, it's probably something that we've held off a little bit too long on talking about with video games. A few big groups of things. There's visuals, there's gameplay.
Yep.
And there's sound.
Yeah. One particular aspect of sound is what I wanted us to focus on. Because effects are one thing, right? Effects are great. Effects are, you know, Foley work is always fascinating to look at. But music is one of those things where it really captures and enhances the atmosphere of a game. I mean, the title music for a game can really get you pumped up, really inspire you or into playing the game. But
right, so let's just throw a title at this. So let's talk about video game music. There we go. There's an easy title.
Yeah, but the thing that got me was I was thinking about this, and I was thinking, I honestly don't remember a lot of the video game music from, like, the PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 3 generation. I don't remember a lot of it, and I know people talk about the Skyrim music and everything like that, and how wonderful it was, but I listen to a lot of classical music, right? I do listen to a lot of classical music on the side, and for me, the Skyrim music wasn't particularly special. To people who listen to classical music, Skyrim music was just, it's just another classical piece. Not really.
Give it a really nerdy insult, which is only going to be an insult from me because I think this guy's a hack. It's very Hans Zimmer.
Yeah, it's very Hans Zimmer. It's very throwaway, you know, throwaway movie orchestral music, that sort of thing.
You go to the corner shop, and the corner shop just so happens to sell orchestral pieces as well, and you get one of your orchestral pieces from the corner shop and throw in some vague Norwegian, Scandinavian shouts, and there you go, Skyrim music. That's an unpopular opinion, but to go back to what you were saying, I do think there's some contemporary good scores.
There are some good
themes
scores.
Or motifs. I think the Uncharted one is particularly iconic because it's simple.
Yeah.
And it can be played on any instrument. It's not like a overly embellished musical score. And I think Nier Automata is the best piece of video game music I've heard this decade or so.
Again, you're talking about exceptions rather than the rule, though, aren't you?
But generally speaking, I agree.
Because the thing is, you're always going to get the exceptions. You're always going to get the exceptions. Well, you going with Uncharted and Nier Automata, you wouldn't choose those over something like Horizon Zero Dawn or something like that. Your first thought would be, why hasn't he gone with Horizon? God of War?
My first thought was, Horizon had music. I can't remember.
Exactly. Do you see what I mean?
I played it for quite a while.
Do you see what I mean? Right, I found a list of the top 100 greatest video game soundtracks, right? And in the top 20... not one game in the top 20 is from the PlayStation 4 era.
As far as PlayStation 4 era, I think God of War is pretty good.
God of War is
still it's not that memorable. It's kind of like Skyrim in a lot of degrees, but by a more competent composer.
Yeah. Let me start, like, way back when and work my way forward in time, because that might be easier, right? A lot of people, when you talk about video game scores, when you talk about music that is iconic to a video game, you'll have things like the Tetris game music, right? You'll have things like the Mario theme tune. Yep, right? Yeah. Those are very simple tunes, right? But they are memorable. They're memorable because they hark to... there's the nostalgia attached to it. There's, you know, they hark back to...
And weirdly, I remember the Sonic music when he was drowning.
Yeah.
I think that must have happened a lot when I was playing Sonic as a kid.
It probably did. But then, if you spin on a little bit, you get to something like Final Fantasy VII. What does everyone remember from Final Fantasy VII? They remember the victory music. Da, 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 da. That's what they remember from Final Fantasy VII. And something like Sephiroth's tune or Aerith's tune or whatever it was.
I don't really remember anything from Final Fantasy, to be honest.
You know that.
I think I finished the first disc and then just got bored of it.
Most Final Fantasy VII fans will remember that that simple piano music. Do, 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 That was Final Fantasy X. That was the Zanarkand theme tune from Final Fantasy X. But there is a piano piece that's associated with Final Fantasy VII. What people remember from Final Fantasy VIII, though, is the intro music, Liberi Fatali, the operatic intro music from Final Fantasy VIII.
I don't remember. I played Final Fantasy VIII quite extensively, and I don't remember that.
Do you not remember the intro?
For me, I'm the worst case scenario for video game music.
Yeah.
Because I think about 99.99% of it is...
Yeah.
Unremarkable, paint-by-numbers, soulless rubbish.
Yeah.
I think the music that was made in the 16 and 8-bit era is more memorable and better because technical nerdy stuff is... Just when you're talking about movies, limitations and lack of resources are the mother of invention. So you've got to work with what you have to make something stand out. Those machines had very rudimentary systems to put graphics, music, all this stuff. So the music is a very limited number of keys in a very limited range.
Yeah. One of the theme tunes that I always remember is the music from Xenon 2. Right, Xenon 2 was a shoot 'em up by the Bitmap Brothers that was out on like the Commodore Amiga and that. And I remember that theme tune because it was quite literally, it was adapted from an actual music track. It was adapted from Into the Dragon by Bomb the Bass, right? And they actually applied that to music. It was one of the first times I'd ever seen an actual pop song turned into a video game score. And I'd never seen that ever. In video games.
For a long time, the music in video games wasn't actual music. It was what they could do with the engine.
Exactly.
Most of the engine was given over to the game and the gameplay and the graphics.
Exactly. One of the reasons I brought up Liberi Fatali was because it was one of the first times that people had seen in video games, people had actually seen a proper operatic cinematic introduction done in a way to get you excited for the game. You could have used that as a trailer for the game on pretty much any platform.
Going back to the basic stuff, though, I honestly believe Nintendo were the masters of it. Absolutely, 100%. Nobody could come close. That basic, memorable hooks, basic hooks.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nintendo were masters of it for the consoles, but as I keep saying...
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
As I keep saying, there's a lot of video game music that people will remember, but they won't remember where they remember it from, and the reason why they don't remember is because it was probably on a Commodore 64 or a ZX Spectrum or a Commodore Amiga or something like that, and everyone's
forgotten
about those.
Yeah, but I think the biggest problem with a lot of modern video game music is one word.
Graphics.
Do you know what that word is?
Graphics.
No. Do you want another swing? Or am I going to have to put you out of your misery?
Well, I'm not. I refuse to be taken out the back like Old Yeller.
Well, it was always going to happen one day, Rob, so it might as well be a day. So you're not going to guess, are you?
Commercialism? Consumerism?
No.
Capitalism?
No, you're going way too big and broad. Cinematic.
Cinematic. Oh, God, yeah, yeah. Everything has to be cinematic. Do you know the prime example of what you're talking about is when they do the trailers and they always say the cinematic trailer?
Yeah, well, it was a terrible trailer and terrible music, but I can't remember which Final Fantasy it was, but it had like some crap pop star like Leona Lewis or something.
It was Final Fantasy 13. It was Leona Lewis, you're right.
Yeah, nothing cinematic about that. That's just sort of disposable guff pop music.
Yeah, but they used it, and, you know, credit to Square Enix.
Got a lot of reaction.
credit to Square Enix, you know, they stuck to their guns, and it's fine. I'm not the biggest fan of Final Fantasy 13. I think it's a story that could have been told on one disc rather than three games.
But I remember that about it.
I remember that much. But then again, I'm also the brain that remembers Final Fantasy X2's variety of pop songs.
You see, here's another sort of, relating it to movies, this thing in modern horror cinema where everybody uses synth.
Yes.
When everybody uses synth, it's all the same. It's all the same, baby. It's all the same.
It's the same with cinematic
orchestral scores. When everybody uses it, it's all the same. Well, jump back to movies. what really impressed me was a certain Japanese filmmakers in the 1960s who used jazz, and I was like, whoa, this sounds different.
Yeah.
I like this. But video games, don't have that. Everything is just, here is all of the cinematic stuff, and I can't remember any of it because it's all the same.
Do you know the interesting thing about what you just said there about the jazz, right?
I don't like jazz, just to say that. I don't like jazz, but when it's a palate cleanser, I do like it.
Right. When you're looking at, say, anime theme tunes, right, what is the number one theme tune that everyone knows from anime?
Oh, I don't know. That's a big question.
No, it's...
Probably the Dragon Ball one.
No, it's you know it as well. It's Tank from Cowboy Bebop. It's Tank from Cowboy Bebop.
I wouldn't say everybody. Everybody of a certain generation, you know, it depends who you're asking.
No, quite literally, the majority of people who basically have any relationship with... Yeah. It's basically just pure jazz, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's the thing. That's my big problem with video game music. And it's sort of... It's created this little mini industry before 2020, where you had like major concert halls with many-piece orchestras playing the music, the Final Fantasy, whatever.
See, the thing is, again, sometimes that works, right? Certain pieces can work as an orchestral piece. I don't want to pay for an orchestra to play the Mario theme tune. I'm not paying
it's
for that.
It's disrespectful to them. That's not the spirit of what those games are made.
Exactly. I think if you're a musician and you want to play the Mario theme tune, that's on you. You've made that choice. That's fine. Okay? But if you're a professional musician and you're being told, look, you're going to get paid for playing this bunch of theme tunes, and the finale piece, the big piece of the night is the Mario theme tune, you're going to think, what? This is not taxing me in any way. I'm not being challenged as a musician. You know, and you're not being challenged as a professional musician. You want to take pride in your work.
Yeah.
I'm not saying the Mario theme tune is nothing pride worthy because it's lasted so long. It's obviously got its own place in history, but it's not really a taxing theme tune. It's like me learning to play the EastEnders theme tune on the keyboard at school.
My teacher insisting that the only music he'll ever teach us is ABBA on the keyboard.
Yeah.
He ruined my love of music as a performing music anyway. That son of a...
I actually remember the keys for the EastEnders theme tune. That's how much it drilled into us. C, D, E, F, G, A, F. That's the EastEnders theme tune.
Oh, wow. He really did that a lot, didn't he? But I think we have to be positive here. We have to spin this around. It can't all be negative. It can't all be talking about how video game music is essentially one note.
Well, no, that's, again, one of the reasons why...
It has to be an exception.
There are exceptions. That's why I mentioned stuff like Liberi Fatali, the Final Fantasy stuff. Those are things that people remember. And what I got to thinking was, why do they remember them? Why do you remember the Uncharted theme tune? Why is it that other theme tunes, we remember them, whereas we forget other things? Silent Hill, you know, the tune for Silent Hill, the music for Silent Hill. Do you remember it?
I can't remember that.
Okay.
But then again, that's a product of Silent Hill kind of being vacant, isn't it? It's disappeared for a long time. Yeah. So the last time I was actively engaging in Silent Hill was a very, very long time ago.
Yeah.
But to go back to Uncharted, the reason why I remember Uncharted is because at its core, it's a very simple bit of music.
See, I remember the Silent Hill one because I recently did the Alternatives 2 episode for, it was Little Hope.
It's a basic bit of music in which the orchestra adds flavour and texture to it.
Well, that's what the music is supposed to do. It's supposed to add flavour and texture to whatever's happening on screen, right? So I think the Silent Hill does work, but what about The Last of Us?
I don't remember any music from that.
There was very minimal pieces of music on The Last of Us.
But then again, that was kind of by design, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Here's the thing, kind of related to movies again, but there was a movie, a horror movie from a few years ago called The Quiet Place.
Yeah.
And the whole point of A Quiet Place is it's quiet.
Yep.
You can't make any noise.
Yep.
And I think it's one of these pretentious things. It's not the keys you do play, it's the keys you don't play. And I think in The Last of Us, Part 1 at least, I've not played 2, probably not going to either, but in Last of Us Part 1, it's minimal.
Yeah. But
by the same token, I think Red Dead Redemption 1 is a masterpiece of not using music, because when it finally comes in and you finally make that long trek back home and the music kicks in. It's beautiful.
See, that's the thing. I was actually going to bring up Red Dead Redemption as being included in kind of that category of, you know, they don't use it on purpose.
Bear McCreary, and Bear McCreary does great sort of music within that world.
Well, Bear McCreary did the God of War soundtrack as well, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Again, that's one of the ones that I do kind of remember. But, I mean, when you think about games like Resident Evil 4 had a very specific soundtrack, a very specific musicality to it that was very different to the first section of games.
One thing I never remember from Resident Evil is its music.
Resident Evil 4 was one of those ones where they had, like, the intro theme tune when they had, like, the title screen, and then a lot of it was kind of music-free as well.
Yeah, going back to that point, I was just thinking there, you know, I made that comment about a lot of music for movies is the same, but those Japanese movies from the 1960s had this jazz score, which was just so liberating.
Yeah.
That made me think of Bully.
Okay.
Canis Canem Edit, it was also known as. And if I was going to put money on anything being my favourite bit of music from any video game ever, it's Bully. It's the main theme from Bully.
Yeah, I can see that.
I don't know. I think it goes back to what I was saying about Uncharted, though. It's that very, very simple composition at the heart of it. But it's not about creating mood. When it is creating mood, it's just not the same mood as everything else, which is, this is epic. Check out this epicness. This is epic. Bully, it captured that sort of cheekiness of school.
Yeah.
Creating epic's easy. You just need warmth and straining scores of orchestra.
Or just lots of dubstep.
That's not true, but some people think it is.
Yeah, that's why I said it.
Creating specific moods is the work of artists.
Yeah.
Creating generic sort of epicness is dull.
Okay, so here's a question. How much of a piece of music from video games do we associate with particular events of a game? The reason why I'm asking that is because Final Fantasy X, right? And I've spoken to a lot of people about this. Final Fantasy X, the first few bars of To Zanarkand, that song that I did earlier...
I've never played Final Fantasy X, to be honest, so it's just all noise to me.
For a lot of people who played Final Fantasy X, it was basically because there's the big ending of Final Fantasy X, which, so for a lot of people who haven't played it, I'm not going to spoil the ending.
There's a big fish.
Hey?
There's a big fish, Rob.
Yeah, Final Fantasy X is the game that I regard as one of the most depressing Final Fantasy games ever made. And that's because a lot of the game is literally doom, gloom, death, and despair, which is why they went completely the other end with X2 and made it Charlie's Angels. Because they literally got told, do not make Final Fantasy X again.
Maybe they have with 16, who knows, we'll see that. It looks pretty depressing.
It looks pretty depressing, but Final Fantasy X is one of the most depressing outside of, say, 6 and possibly 4. But a lot of people who played 10 really liked the game. And I'll be honest, I have a soft spot for Final Fantasy X as well. And to this day, I can't hear the first few notes of To Zanarkand without thinking immediately that's Final Fantasy X, without thinking of all of the things that happened in the game.
Yeah.
Right. And that's my point. How many games, how many pieces of music do you associate with a game that absorbed you that much? I spent 200 hours on Final Fantasy X.
Honestly, none. Absolutely none. Because I'm going to say, hey, I don't respect video game music.
Yeah, I'm not on about the video game music itself.
But my point is, I love music as a medium.
Yeah,
I listen to it pretty much all day, every day when I'm working.
Yeah.
So I have, like, high standards. And when I made comments like, most of video game music is generic epic.
Yeah.
That surely paints an image of my opinion of video game music by and large.
That's why I was asking about pieces of music associated with games.
I kind of phase out.
Okay.
I phase out a lot of video game music. It's kind of like when you're playing FIFA and you've heard the commentary so many times, you just stop listening.
Yeah, because, I mean, Blur's, was it Song 2, is the only music that I really associate with FIFA.
Yeah, I mean, I'll admit, there was a feeder song which nearly made me get Gran Turismo 2.
Yeah.
I can't remember which feeder song it was, but yeah.
Tony Hawk's had a lot of music in, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Tony Hawk's is probably the biggest landmark for me musically, because Tony Hawk's is basically responsible for a lot of things in my life. The style of clothes that I wear, the music that I listen to, and a lot of other things, you know, and that's a big impact for a game to have.
Yeah. But I mean, there's a weird thing that I've noticed during our conversation. All right. When it comes to like epic score, that sort of thing, you know, the typical cinematic stuff.
Right? Oh, yeah. And going back, I really digged how SSX Tricky used music, because it was like a really interesting remix.
Yeah.
On the gameplay.
But we're on that. In terms of kind of cinematic orchestral music, that's a bust. You and I both kind of agree on that anyway. And for me, a lot of the stuff coming out of video games is just Common Our Garden orchestral music. That's all it is. I don't hear anything particularly special about it. Yes, I am the kind of guy who will listen to classic FM by choice, right?
You're weird.
Right. But that's by the same token, other forms of music that they're trying to apply to games, I've played plenty of games where they've applied a dubstep soundtrack, and I've found it annoying more than anything else.
Well, that's a taste thing. I'm not saying you have to have taste like dubstep, because that's not true. Dubstep is awful, but you have to have the taste for that sort of thing.
Yeah, but I mean, a dubstep or a hard house soundtrack to a game where it's just blaring at me. And I'm just kind of...
I think it worked well with the original Wipeouts, but that was sort of a mood of a time.
That was part of the zeitgeist of that era. That wasn't something that... And the thing is, with Wipeout, it actually worked because of the effect of speed that you had, right? That fast-paced music went with that effect of speed. But it doesn't really go with, you know, a shoot-em-up or something like that, or or a third-person action-adventure game.
No.
Or even a first-person, you know, action game.
I mean, I just going through the games that I played on PlayStation 4, which music from that I remember.
Yeah.
It's just Nier Automata and the Uncharted theme. And for me to say that,
yeah,
a fan of music, to say that I don't remember any of the music.
What about PlayStation 3 era? How many games can you think of?
Well, that's a little bit harder because it's going back a bit further in the old memory banks, but... I think it's a bit better. I think PlayStation 2 and PlayStation 1,
there's much more to choose from with PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2. And a lot of the lists that you look at where they talk about the best scores, the best pieces of music for video games, a lot of them will be PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2.
Curiosity is killing me. What's that top 20? What is that top 20? I have to know.
Okay. Top 20 that this top 100 that I found has is, number one is Ico.
Is it...
I disagree with the list. Let's get it out there. I disagree with this list, basically because I don't think Ico, the music, was particularly memorable. I think that Shadow of the Colossus had much better music.
But okay, let's go. Number one, Ico. Right.
Number two, Chrono Trigger. Okay, I will agree that Chrono Trigger should at least be in the top five. It had amazing
music. I couldn't comment.
It had amazing music.
Okay.
Number three was The Last of Us.
Yeah, because it had that sort of subtle, it doesn't want to be heard, so it's all very acoustic and...
Yeah. Exactly.
Thoughtful. Yeah.
Number four, Mega Man 2.
Never played a Mega Man, admittedly.
Yeah. Number five, Super Metroid.
Again, it goes back to Nintendo have a knack for music. Yeah. So.
Number six, Silent Hill.
And I remember it being, it's Twin Peaksy, moody.
Yeah, it was very Twin Peaksy, moody, ambient. But
just repeating the same words that I said, but making them sound like you're on, you son of a bitch.
No, do you know the weird thing? Is you saying it's very Twin Peaksy, moody, ambient. I've kind of got this weird remix going on in my head of the Twin Peaks theme tune, kind of like in the right half of my brain, the Silent Hill theme tune in the left half. And
yeah. Well, it's just that sort of Americana. It's sort of weird, offbeat, slightly twisted Americana.
Do you know, do you remember Erie, Indiana?
Yeah. Are you asking a stupid question?
I'm asking a rhetorical question, because of course I know you know it.
I adored Erie, Indiana.
Yeah,
it's
a shame they don't make it anymore.
Leave it alone. Yeah. Leave it in the past. It's best there.
Yeah. Number seven, Katamari Damacy. Number eight, Streets of Rage 2.
Katamari Damacy is kind of big, goofy, playful music.
Yeah.
You remember that. It's not particularly good music, but it's very memorable.
Oh, yeah. Because you just kind of go, what is it that I'm playing here?
It's just, the music is like the game. It's just bouncing off all the walls.
Yeah. Number nine is Portal.
Never played a Portal.
I didn't think the music for Portal was particularly memorable. I would have had the number 10. Number 10 is Red Dead Redemption, and I would have had that much higher.
Yeah, because when that music plays when he's heading home, it's beautifully considered.
Exactly. Number 11, The Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time.
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to Nintendo, known way around music.
Number 12, Donkey Kong Country 2, Diddy Kong's Quest.
Never played it.
I haven't played that one either. Resident Evil 4 is number 13. Secret of Mana is number 14. Earthbound is number 15. Final Fantasy 6 is number 16. Jet Set Radio is number 17. Again, one that I would have had much higher because I do remember the music for Jet Set Radio.
Lots of DJ scratching in that.
Yeah. Journey is number 18.
Yeah, Austin Wintory is probably one of the best working today in the video game music, along with Bear McCreary.
Yeah, Super Mario Brothers is number 19, and Sonic the Hedgehog 3 and Knuckles is number 20.
Yeah, just for the drowning music.
Yes.
I've got to reference that somewhere.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about this list is the things that you would expect to see further up the list, further towards number one, aren't there. Stuff like the Final Fantasy VII soundtrack and stuff like that, which I kind of, you know, it makes me respect the list a bit more that they've actually gone with what they think rather than what's popular. Do you see what I mean?
Oh, totally, yeah. I do want to close this out because it feels like I've just absolutely wailed on video game music, like, unjustifiably in some cases, justifiably in others.
Yeah.
But the reason why I pick on it so much is not because I just generally hate music isn't mine, which isn't true. I think it's always been a problem with the platform.
Well,
I mean, the amount of information they can get on a disc or a cartridge or whatever, it's always been limited.
Yeah. But
it seems like with the Xbox Series X and the PlayStation 5, they've finally completely got rid of those limits.
Yeah, but I'm not actually holding my breath for the future of video game music, because from my perspective, I'm looking at it from this perspective. The lower the graphical quality, the better the music, right?
And
we hit this plateau point where everything kind of worked perfectly, and that was the PlayStation 1 era and the PlayStation 2 era, kind of those two kind of blending together. But because it kind of went to a peak at that point and then plateaued for a little bit, and then it's basically just tailed off now, and we're basically having diminishing returns when it comes to video game music.
What's that company? It's basically, you get a paste. It's a flavourless grey paste, but it has all of your nutrients you could ever want.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it's called. You can get it. It's value for people who work in the health industry and people who have 15-hour shifts. As a metaphor, that's what modern video game music is. It's grey paste, which has all the basic nutrients.
See, when you get right down to it,
that's really cruel, but it's
What does music in a video game do in actuality? What is it supposed to do? And I think it's one of the reasons why I think that games like Red Dead Redemption and the original Last of Us, Resident Evil 4, stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the reasons why they stand out is because of their lack of music.
When you use it, it's when you don't use it.
And it's also how they've applied those particular pieces of music. You know, why were those particular pieces of music created? They're there to evoke a particular emotion, and they do that when they actually appear, but they don't overuse it.
They let the moment speak for itself.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't underscore it, saying, this is a moment where you're supposed to feel scared or...
But then you look
excited, yay, or whatever.
Yeah.
They let the moments speak for themselves, and I think it's not just a problem with video games. Movies has had that issue for a long time, but there's people who are breaking out of that mold, who are doing other things and making music which allows the game or the movie or whatever to breathe and speak for itself.
I have a question, right? We both play a lot of third-person action-adventure games where you wander around the wilderness and stuff like that, yeah?
Hmm.
And of those, I honestly can't think of many where I will be wandering around the wilderness and not have some kind of theme tune playing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I'm in the wilderness. Where is the band? I'm going to get you, sucker, where I'm traveling with my own, you know, with my
don't,
own.
Don't make music. Me trying to, ex- don't make me explain diegesis to you, because that's not what I'm doing right now. Diegetics. I'm not going to do that. But yeah, it's, I think video game music could be a bit more sparsely used and it'd do the world of good.
Yeah.
As far as making these things memorable.
It's like flavor, it's like seasonings when it comes to food. You don't need a little. You don't need a lot. You just need a little because it goes a long way.
Yeah, if you have your food and you cover it, whatever it is, in garlic, mayo, tomato sauce, barbecue, salsa, whatever.
Yeah.
You don't like the food. You like the sauce.
Yeah, you like the flavour of the sauces that you're used to. And that's what we're seeing a lot of in video game music. I mean, I would love for... take Ghost of Tsushima, for example, right? Have you noticed how not one person has said the music is memorable?
Well, I don't think that's relevant. I think I want to end this on a more upbeat point and just say one game that you played recently that you think the music is underrated in it and the music is like a key point of it.
That I played recently?
I say recently over the last few years, not just like last week, to be specific.
I'll be honest, I know that you're critical of video game music in certain ways, but... I think I'm
in all ways, Rob. In all ways.
Yeah, I think I'm equally critical. I don't rate a lot of video game music.
So we can't even end this on a positive note.
I mean, let me put it this way, right? Do you know one of the standout pieces of music for me for a while now has been the opening theme for the original Kingdom Hearts game? And the reason for that is because the song is actually... by Utada Hikaru, who I actually quite like as a singer. She sings it in Japanese and in English, so there's a version in both languages. And the orchestral version actually works as a piece of music.
Yeah, just let me qualify. I was like a programmer for music at a radio station, so I think I was exposed to an awful lot more music than just accepting what's ever in front of me.
Yeah.
I think if any time a video game ever uses reggae, I will love that game. Not because I like reggae, but because it's so different to anything else that's been used.
Believe it or not, that's actually one of the reasons why the Jet Set Radio soundtrack sticks in my head, is because it was using mixes of a lot of different styles of music, including reggae.
It's the things which stick out which appeal to me. Things which are different. Things which, I like that, that's different.
Yeah.
And honestly... it's few and far in between. I mean, I kind of like the Guacamole music just because it's Mexican music. And Mexican music isn't on any video games. It's not in any video games. It's all sort of generic orchestral and traditional, sort of quirkyified Mexican music just doesn't fit within that wheelhouse.
Yeah.
So I really wish we could finish this on a more positive
note. There is actually something that I can finish on a positive note.
I'll finish on the positive note then. You do
right.
that.
Right. See... There is a game, and it's an indie game. And, right, now Rob knows I am a huge fan of Rez and Child of Eden, right? I think Rez and Child of Eden are two of the most interesting, innovative music-based games that have been made, and I absolutely adore the ideas behind them. And recently I got to playing a particular game on the PS4, and you were the one who told me that I might not like this game, Rob. And then I saw what it was. I was like, no, this is totally my jam. Because I'd heard about it before.
I can't remember.
Sayonara Wild Hearts.
Okay.
And the reason why I picked that one in particular is because music is a big part of the game. I mean, the game literally is, you control it and you only have one button. So it harks back to my early days of playing video games where all we had was a joystick with one button, right? Now you try using that single button to do basically everything.
Yeah, you see, you're setting me up for rampant innuendo, but I'm going to let you talk about Sayonara Wild Hearts instead.
But Sayonara Wild Hearts is, it's a delight of a game. It is literally, it ticks every single box that I have for this particular style of game. It's on rails. For a lot of it, right? So you use the single button to control the different actions, but the music, because the music is it changes from one encounter to the next. The actual style of music changes, And so it creates this weird composite effect for the entire game. And I kind of love it for that.
That's okay. That's cool. Okay, so on that positive note,
I wish more games were like Sayonara Wild Hearts and Resident Child of Eden. Anyway, right. So let us know what you think. What are your favourite pieces of video game music? Do you agree with us? Do you disagree with us? And if you do disagree with us, let us know why. You know, we are always interested in finding out what people think.
Yeah, I mean, I'm an insufferable music nerd, so I'm not a good case here.
Hello, I'm Professor Elemental, and whenever I'm not riding a badger around my grounds or hitting my monkey butler with a stick, I'm listening to The Geek Show, and my God, I love it.
I'm Graham Williamson, and I like films starring pop stars. I like films about pop stars. I like films which have set design by pop stars. Probably gone a bit far there, I can't actually think of one of those. Anyway, this is why I've launched The Geek Show's new podcast, Pop Screen, where every week, me and a guest host take a look at one film, either starring by or about a pop star, and by pop I could mean anything from heavy metal to blues to disco to hip-hop, and we analyse it relentlessly, asking all of the big questions.
Ewan, who's your favourite Spice Girl?
Oh no. Can I say Richard E. Grant's my favourite Spice Girl?
And even giving some of the big answers with our unparalleled level of research and nerdishness.
I'm definitely a Beatles fan. I was on a Beatles tour taxi in Liverpool with my family, and the tour guide started referring to me for little details and to double check his facts.
So whether you're an absolute beginner or a 24-hour party person, get swept away. I'll stop doing this now, I promise. By Pop Screen, the new podcast from the Geek Show Podcast Network. It's about music, it's about movies, it's about nonsense. We're hosted on Audioboom and available on your podcast provider of choice, as well as the Geek Show's YouTube channel. Remember to like and subscribe.
And welcome to the final edition of Impossible Mission of 2020.
I was going to say, qualify that.
Oh, this year, good riddance. Yeah. So, in that spirit of wanting this year to go and do one, there you go, classic Northernerism for all of you international listeners. We're going to be looking forward to 2021.
Yes.
In particular, let's say 8-ish, because I'm assuming others are going to pop up while talking, 8-ish games that we're looking forward to in 2021 without, important stressor here, of just picking 8 really, really obvious AAA games, because that's boring and we could pull that episode out of our arse with no effort.
Yeah, I don't like episodes like that. I don't like it when you just pick the games that everyone else is looking forward to next year.
Yeah, because games are more diverse and varied and colourful and imaginative and from all the corners of the world than they've ever have been. So, you know, reflect that. Don't just have a video where you basically pick the next New Horizon, New God of War, or New Halo, and yeah, that's about it.
Obviously, we can't avoid some games that everyone else is looking forward to. Otherwise, we wouldn't be human and we'd be lying, but, you know.
Yeah, so without further ado, let's just jump into it. The first one is me basically playing footsie with both consoles because I don't know which one I want yet, because I don't think I've been won over by either side. The first one of my picks is a pure blood indie game from, my opinion, probably the best publisher of indie games around. Once Upon a Time That Honor was held by Devolver Digital. Now I'd say it's Annapurna. And the game is The Artful Escape.
Ooh.
It's coming out on Xbox and PC. In this one, you play a character called Francis Vendetti, who is the son of a very famous music guy. And the point of the game is you go through basically a compendium of psychedelic rock opera scenarios, trying to figure out what style of music he wants to play. sounds kind of tedious on paper, but it's one of these things where you're basically playing concept art for rock albums, and it looks stunning.
See, I like that.
Sort of stunning, where I've never seen anything like this. I mean, this is maybe like the more colourful excesses of Psychonauts, like Psychonauts 2, with that Jack Black trailer. There's some sort of comparison there, but this is just 2D platformer, which I think are better than they've ever been.
Yeah.
And rock album art. And there's two sort of surefire winners. And you add in Annapurna as well, and I'm really looking forward to this.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. For me, it's a little bit more... obviously, the very first game that I'm looking forward to next year, very, very first game I'm looking forward to, comes out in January. Been following it for a while, and it's because I'm a terminal fan of the franchise. It's the new Atelier game. That's done. Yeah, that's out of the way.
That goes without saying, doesn't it?
That's done. That's out of the way.
In other news, rain is wet.
Exactly. We can move on now. The first game that kind of... See, I've been going through this phase of playing a lot of Metroidvanias and...
What have you been playing? You're saying you've been going through a lot of them.
Well, I've been playing a few of them, like Sundered and... what was the other one? The one that I chose as an alternative to Demon Souls. Blasphemous.
Spanish nastiness.
Yeah. I've been playing that as well. And we have a few other Metroidvania platforms I'm going to play over the next few weeks. But there was one that caught my eye because there's a movie from, I think, the 80s, from late 80s, early 90s, but that starred Rutger Hauer as a blind swordsman called Blind Fury. Right.
The 80s were a special decade, and yes. Never have so many movies been made by so much cocaine.
Yeah, but the thing is, the whole idea of the blind swordsman has become this kind of mythical thing, hasn't it?
Yeah, blame Zatoichi.
Yeah, Zatoichi is the one responsible for it. But I saw Blind Fate, Edo no Yami, and I thought, ooh, that looks interesting.
I'll where be honest, I don't even know what this one is. This is a total left-field one, this. Yes.
Well, I mean, it's from Troglodyte Games. It's due out next year. It's an action platformer in which you play a blind cyber samurai.
You see, that sounds cool and all, but I'm finding it very hard to be motivated to play more Metroidvanias.
No.
I'm glad that you can find that motivation, personally.
The thing is, it looks really colourful. It's got that kind of cybernetic vibe to it, but still maintains the colourful aesthetic, and it looks really interesting. The monster designs are actually... They've basically taken like stuff from Japanese folktales and cyberized them in interesting ways, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's about the best way to do it in a way which isn't just appealing to sort of nerdy, hardcore folktale and history fans.
Exactly. I mean, it's a side-scrolling platformer, and, you know, I'm happy. I'm happy looking at it. I'm just thinking, yeah, I can't wait to play that.
Yeah, there's a PlayStation 5 indie game that I want to reference just because it's got a fun name. You know what it's called?
Yeah, you know what it's called? I know what it's called.
It's called Fistrob. It's an acronym. And that's that. That's it.
I thought you were going to go with Rims Racing, but...
No. I'm just going to drop Fist in there and...
After I've said Rims Racing.
Yeah, because you play a cybernetic rabbit who's beating stuff up. That's cool. It's part of the PlayStation Indies thing that they're doing. It looks cool.
Okay.
And it's called Fist.
I'll take your word for it.
Okay, second one for me. A lot of press has been going to Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2 Ultimate Opus Magna Edition. It's got a bad title.
Yeah.
I've never really been a vampire sort of fan, though. I'll be honest. I mean, vampires are cool and all, but I think they've been ruined by a collection of What We Do in the Shadows and Blade. So, you know, I'm a bit done by them. Less done. The perennially undercooked horror monster.
Yeah.
Which there's not many good movies for him. I mean, I could probably name about 8. And that's going through all the countries they've ever made movies and all the eras. And video games even less. And that is Werewolf the Apocalypse.
Yeah.
I don't really know much about this, to be honest. but I think there's been games where you play basically a normal human and you play a meaty version of the human. And you can reference all sorts of things that do that, sort of like demon blood mode or whatever. But so it's kind of like a type of transformation into something else. But it's never been done as a werewolf. Now, the thing about this is, I don't know whether I'm really interested and excited about this because it's going to be great, or I'm really interested and excited about this because I think werewolves are cool and I want to play a werewolf.
I think it might be a little bit of both.
It's just ticking my boxes. And I don't know. We've done a video in this series before where we've played games that should be for us but aren't. And I'm scared that this is going to be one of those, but at the same time, I'm still looking forward to it. Do you get me?
Yeah, I get you. Werewolves are one of those things where there's a lot of mythology about werewolves, but they're not really understood that well. In the same way as vampires, they always get, you know, they always play second fiddle to vampires. They're either the vampire's servants or, you know, the subservient. You know, they're always subservient in some way to the vampires. And
then that end up biting the back the vampires in the ass when they go nuts and eat them.
Yeah, because, you know, then you've got movies like Van Helsing and what was that one with...
Underworld.
Underworld, that's it, yeah. Forgotten who plays the main role in that.
Kate Beckinsale.
That's it, yeah. So, yeah, there's Underworld and Van Helsing where they say, oh, no, the werewolves can actually live. They can eat vampires. And I'm like, but if werewolves are so powerful, how come they're always portrayed as being subservient?
Yeah, Lycanthropy is very, very interesting. And also, it's badass because you play a giant, muscly werewolf man.
Also, it's one of the best jokes in Young Frankenstein, as far as I'm concerned.
Go on.
Werewolf, werewolf, werewolf.
That's like God to your dad joke.
I know. It's so good. It happens when they're doing the, you know, the ride to the castle before sunset.
Yeah.
And then the wolf howls and Jim Wilder just says, werewolf, werewolf. He goes, werewolf. It's brilliant.
Ah, man. I mean, I love that movie, but you're making me question it now. You're making me question me love of that movie. So let's just move on to your number two so we can retain some credibility here.
All right, okay. So my number two is, it's an unusual game that called Tormented Souls. It's horror, obviously, you know. But it's by Dual Effect Abstract, and it's due out later on next year, I think. Sometime later next year, apparently. But here's the thing. They reckon that because they've been inspired by Resident Evil and Alone in the Dark and games like that, this is a fresh take on the fixed perspective adventure survival horror game. And I thought, that sounds quite interesting because no one's really doing fixed perspective survival horror anymore.
I think you need to sort of, this is a thing which has been consigned to the history books like Tank Controls, but it's basically like the old Resident Evil. You walked into a room and the camera stayed in one position and you moved to the next room and the camera moved. There's no sort of maneuverable camera.
I think when they're saying fixed perspective, from the trailers, what I'm gathering is that the camera does move, you know, so the camera does follow the character, but the perspective of the camera stays the same. Do you see what I mean?
Not in the slightest.
maybe you'd need to watch the trailer to see it. The effect I'm getting, because in one scene in the trailer, you know, she kind of goes past an object and the camera shifts around slightly. It follows round from behind her, behind the character Caroline. So I get the feeling that the fixed perspective isn't really like completely static. I think there is some flexibility with it. I am curious what their fresh take on the fixed perspective idea is.
There's got to be more that interests you besides the camera, because that's kind of...
No. I mean, the design of it, I mean, it is basically, it looks really nice. You know, it looks like, it's got the kind of the vibe. When you look at the environments, when you look at the rooms that the character's exploring and moving through, it's got all of the hallmarks of like classic Resident Evil games, you know, and classic Alone in the Dark games.
I will say this, I will admit this. The one thing I've always hated about Resident Evil is the puzzles and Silent Hill. Always hated the puzzles.
This one has puzzles, you know. I don't know how good the puzzles are. So, you know, we'll have to see. But it, you know, the whole thing reminds me of, you know, classic Resident Evil games and classic Alone in the Dark games and Silent Hill games. And I'm looking forward to it because Resident Evil's changed so much now from what it used to be. And yeah, I've played, you know, and so is, and I don't know what Silent Hill is going to end up as. And we don't know anything about any new possible Alone in the Dark games. I don't think there might be any.
Yeah, I think that attempt at Atari bringing it back in the PlayStation 3 era kind of just shot that franchise through the heart with a stake.
Yeah, I think if it does get revived, it'll be a long time afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, I just saw it and I thought, someone's trying to do something that, that, you know, trying to recapture that magic that Resident Evil and the rest of those games had when they first appeared.
Well, there's the impression I'm getting of it, not so much those titles, but it seems by your feelings that it's recapturing the classic idea of survival horror.
That's what I'm hoping it's doing. I'm not saying that it's going to. I haven't played it. I've only seen a trailer.
Yeah. I mean, this is anticipated. We played none of these games.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, Tormented Souls.
Bit of a generic title, I'll give it that. But titles aren't everything.
Yeah, I mean,
just as long as it's not got a title with a bald guy holding his head, it should do okay.
I mean, if you want interesting titles, just get a just find a Japanese game and then translate it into English.
It's gibberish, though, isn't it? Isn't it, Rob? It's just gibberish. utter delightful gibberish.
Don't forget, I know for a fact there is an anime series called Absolute Justice Love Pheromone.
Case in point there, pretty. That means nothing whatsoever.
Okay,
so moving on to my number three pick. I'm not a huge first-person shooter fan. My favourite of this past generation was Wolfenstein New Colossus, which didn't have a multiplayer. It was a pure story, really well-written story, really well-played-out story. Takes some bold, creative choices, super slick gameplay. But with the industry going, like, multiplayer first-person shooters, it's not really for me anymore. So when one comes out which is purely based around the, or appears to be based around the story mode, like, I don't know, a Bioshock or Wolfenstein, it's, my ears prick up and, I'm interested. And this one has been around for a while, but it's not actually being confirmed anyway. I think it's in development hell, unfortunately. But still, that's not going to stop me hoping it's going to be out in 2021. And that's the Russian-made Atomic Heart, which is all those things that I was talking about in a weirdo sci-fi world where everything is designed in a way which is totally creative. It's not like, here is some robot, so let's do some robot designs. It's taking some real bold creative risks. I hope it does see light of day.
Yeah.
Because it looks cool.
Awesome.
And there's not many games in that sort of space. I wouldn't say it's the AAA space, sort of like the AA space, sort of in between indie and AAA, where you play it and you think, what the hell is that? What the hell am I playing? What is this? What's happening? And that's it. And also, there's not many Russian games. I can't tell you many Russian games. I think Metro is based off a Russian novel. I don't think it's Russian developed. But besides that, I don't think there is any, really. It's not a country with a lot of video game output.
Yeah.
Good input, Rob. You're having a good conversation in that one.
There's not much I can say. I mean, you pretty much summed it up. Russia's one of those countries where you don't see a lot of video game output. I mean, you do get some on the fringes of indie development. There was a game called Chernobylite, but that was the Farm 51. Are they a Russian developer? No, they're Polish.
I shook my head while I was drinking there, so he caught me on.
You don't really get a lot of Russian developers, as far as I can tell. You get a lot of Polish developers who may be working with Russian developers. Maybe there's something, some kind of cross-border collaborations going on,
It's kind of like Chinese games. Chinese games are starting to grow as well. So
anything
which challenges the status quo of it just being America and Japan, I think it's good, interesting.
Yeah, but I mean, I think you've got to take into account the... when you're talking about countries like China and Russia, you've got to take into account the political state.
Are you suggesting that I'm going to be sort of programmed by a Russian game?
No, I'm suggesting that the that the government might assume that video game developers might be preaching seditious messages in their video games and then arrest them. Well, more along the lines of this game that you've made just happens to have this reference in it, so we're going to arrest you and put you in prison.
Ah, like that Taiwanese game from the makers of the Detention.
Yeah.
Which looks amazing, by the way. And yeah. It's gone forever.
Yeah. Because reasons. Because political reasons.
Yeah, that might be the reason behind it being in development hell, to be honest. You might be onto something there.
And that's what my main concern is when it comes to Russian and Chinese developers. Because you've got to have, in order to make video games, you've got to have creative freedom. Yes. You've got to have the freedom to make these creative decisions. And you've got to have the freedom to reference things that, you know, that can sometimes be a little bit on the nose.
Well, I don't think it's a problem with Russia. Russia have a bad reputation, but I don't think it's anywhere near as bad as people believe it is over there. Because some of the movies that are coming out from Russia are incredibly critical of the Russian state and Russian society. So,
yeah, but
again,
movies,
I think, is okay.
Thing is, movies, people are more accepting of things like that from movies because it's an established form.
Maybe.
Whereas video games are classed as the new youth form, and you don't want the youth being influenced by things like that.
Yeah, it's much more TikTok than socialist theory.
Exactly.
And Merry Christmas. And that little talk there was brought to you by the Krampus. So,
I am not some weird demon thing that fights Santa in a barn.
Honestly, if that was the option, I'd go for Krampus every day of the week, because Krampus is badass and he has the better movies.
This is true. Anyway, are we on to me?
And bad guys have more fun.
Yeah. Are we on to me now?
Yes, we are.
Right. One of the games that I'm looking forward to next year is a game that I never, ever, ever, and I went high-pitched on purpose there, thought would get a remake. And I mean that.
Okay.
I mean that completely.
So what are we talking here?
Near Replicant, bloody Yoko Taro and his moonhead.
So you got to context that, because it just sounds like you're having a go at somebody with a big bald head.
Now, Yoko Taro tends to wear a thing in the shape of a moon with a big grin on its face or something like that. And he's notorious for wearing that. So look it up. You'll see what I mean. But Yoko Taro, he is some kind of weird, mad genius.
He's acknowledged it now, but for years he was sort of persona non grata, wasn't he?
Yeah, but the thing is, I am a huge fan of Drakengard, right? I think Drakengard is one of the most underrated franchises in video games. I think Drakengard 1, 2, and 3 are great games. I loved playing through them, weird as they are. But then I am weird, so it appealed to me. And there is nothing more satisfying. I mean, Drakengard had...
Is that the one with the dragons?
Yes.
Am I thinking of something else?
Drakengard has the dragons, yes.
Yeah.
And you could basically... It was basically one versus however many on the ground, and then you can call your dragon to do, like, an airstrike and then climb on the dragon and start just spamming them from the air. And you had, like, levels where you could fly your dragon doing missions on your dragon as well, a bit like Panzer Dragoon. But here's the thing.
Is this Near Replicant version or the numbers?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. See, Drakengard, one of the endings from Drakengard spins on to, I think, Drakengard 3, and then that spins on to Near Replicant, which then spins on to Near Automata, right? If I remember the timeline correctly. It's a very weird timeline. It's very complicated. And Nier, I actually played when it came out on the PlayStation 3. And I always thought Nier was hard done by. It was a very, very good game that was lacking polish because nobody had faith in it.
Well, it wasn't given the marketing clout by Square Enix.
That's what I mean. Nobody had faith in it. Nobody had faith in the original game, even though it was following on a franchise that had been reasonably successful for Square. I mean, it had an interesting storyline, it had an interesting premise to it, and it didn't really get the recognition it deserved until Nier Automata came out.
Yeah, and it was a great game, though.
Yeah, it was a great game, and I am really hopeful that the remake of Nier Replicant will prove what I've been saying for years. Near Replicant was criminally underrated.
Yeah, it seems like, from what gameplay I've seen, the engine is using the same one as Nier Automata.
Yeah.
Which is as slick as butter. I know butter isn't slick. Okay, slick as oil.
butter is technically oil. But anyway, what I'm saying is that if they'd basically thrown money at it in the way that they're throwing money at the remake, right? If they'd given the funding for and developed it to the same level as they're doing with as they did with like something like Nier Automata, or even or even Final Fantasy 13, one of the episodes of Final Fantasy 13, instead of spending all of that money on Final Fantasy 13, you could have spent some of that money on Nier.
Well, I hope it's a success, because one of the episodes that we've got coming up is about games that are too big to fail, and Square have had one of those recently.
Yes, they have.
Doozy of a doozer.
Oh, God, yeah. That was a Titanic moment, wasn't it?
Yes. Okay. So that's your number three. My number four, just running through them again. The Art for the Escape, Werewolf the Apocalypse, Atomic Heart, and this last one is the biggest one, so I'm not going to go on about it too much. But it's Deathloop from Arkane.
Oh, yeah, that's the one with all the hitmen, isn't it?
Yeah, sort of like a 24-hour loop, and you got to kill a group of people in the time that you have, and figure out their whatever. You know, it's Hitman, but in the Arkane universe. I've talked on this show before how I really, really love Arkane, because they tell a compact story, they get all sorts in it, got great gameplay systems, and they don't mess about.
Yeah.
And this has a sort of grindhouse 1970s style with a little bit of early hip-hop, some soul and some funk in there. This is just made for me, man. This is just wonderful.
Yeah.
And this is the sort of thing, people talk about console exclusives that sell people on the console, a new console, that get them through the door. They talk about big things like God of War, Spider-Man, whatever. But for me, it's stuff like this, which will sway me. And this looks cool as hell.
Do you know, when I saw the trailer for Deathloop, I had, bizarrely, it gave me a Killer 7 vibe.
Yeah, yeah. Also, just on this note, there's rumours of a Prey sequel, but that's besides the point. But yeah, it does totally remind me of a less LCD'd to the nipples version of Killer 7.
Yeah, you understand what I mean, though. I was getting a weird Killer 7 vibe from it. And also, bizarrely, do you remember X3, which I think is getting a remake?
You mean the movie, Triple X?
13.
Oh, 13, yeah, it got a remake, and it got wailed on, because it basically dropped the entire creative premise of that game, and
yeah.
it was really hated on.
The thing is, Deathloop gives me a weird 13 vibe as well.
So mashing together 13 and
Killer 7.
Yeah, I can see that.
With a bit of Grindhouse and...
we're talking some... This is like sort of 101 of how to make a game that Rob really digs.
Yeah. Throw in a bit of Grindhouse, add a bit of disco, and you're sorted.
Anachronistic disco. When disco comes where you expect it, you think, get away, this is terrible. But when disco comes where you least expect it, you're like, oh my God, this is the best music ever. Oh, wow.
Exactly.
And, yeah, like I said, though, this is the sort of title that will sell me on a next generation console. You can keep your God of Wars, you can keep all the other stuff. This sort of groovy stuff is what's made for me.
Yeah. And you know the anachronistic disco music you're on about? Right. Yeah. It's the main reason why I love racing games, is because when I was growing up, there was always a car chase, and for some reason, there was always disco music during the car chase. And I that's about as anachronistic as you can get. It's a car chase. People are shooting at us. Why is there disco music?
Yeah, that's classy. That's classy integration of disco there. I approve of this.
So anyway, speaking of classy integration with disco, my
Segway
final game
out of that.
That I am going to, and you're going to see just how hard I segue straight into because there is a segue. The Disco Boys are a segue. Can you guess what the game is? If the disco, I've mentioned the Disco Boys.
No,
Evil Genius 2. What else am I waiting for?
I didn't think you were going to go with that. I thought you were going to go with something like Stalker 2 or something.
No, Evil Genius 2, man. I am... Right. I really liked Dungeon Keeper when that came out, right? Even yeah. with the weird fetish vibe going on in there. Peter Molyneux, you dirty man.
Everybody's got to get the rocks off whether they're like, you know.
I know. Yeah, there was kinky stuff going on in that dungeon, okay? Kids do not play that game.
Which is now a Google Stadia office, but, you know, it's career developed.
But anyway, after that, I was thinking, there are no games like this anymore. There are no kind of lair management games. And then I played Evil Genius, and I went, this is what I've been waiting for. This is just playing into all of my stereotypes about myself.
So is this like basically when, what was it called? I can't remember. Two Point Hospital rolled around. Oh my God, this is Theme Hospital. Where have you been all my life?
Well, Evil Genius 2 is just building on Evil Genius, and I've played Evil Genius to death.
No, but is it like one of those things where a game that you wanted and wasn't around, and it just came, and then you're like, oh, I finished.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, you've got your choice of lair. I mean, it's called Evil Genius 2, World Domination, and you can pick, you can be one of four geniuses this time. You've got your lair, you've got your hired goons, you've got your traps, you've got your sharks with freaking lasers.
There's a reference. Is it a volcano base as well?
You can have whatever base you want. You can have a volcano base, you can have a secret underwater base, you can have, you know... different types of bases now.
A base which is somehow like halfway up the Alps in a ski resort. That's in a few Bond movies, actually.
Yeah. And what I want to know is, where's the base under the desert?
I think that's too much high maintenance. I think there's...
No. Do you know the weird thing? Is there is a base under the desert, and do you know who uses it?
I don't know, but it's in a Jackie Chan movie.
Yeah, it's in a Jackie Chan movie, but the other base under the desert that's used by something from a... From that isn't Jackie Chan, G.I. Bloody Joe.
G.I. Joe has a desert base.
Yeah,
that is not planning with a straight head there, G.I. Joe.
It's in the G.I. Joe movies. They've got a base under the desert.
So G.I. stands for General Ignorance.
And if you're wondering why I've watched the G.I. Joe movie, do not ask. It's a long story.
Yeah. So there's some games we're looking forward to in 2021. I mean, obviously there's more. I dropped Dead Static Drive, which is basically a survival game, isometric, Lovecraft monsters.
Yeah, I mean, cool. You mentioned Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2, which I'm looking forward to. I'm also looking forward to Swan Song as well.
Yeah, obviously looking forward to God of War 2, but I doubt it's going to be out. There's other things, you know.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of stuff coming out next year. I am curious about that weird Geiger-esque horror type sci-fi game called Scorn.
Yeah, I don't know. That seems like it's trying a bit too hard to be gross.
Well, I don't know. I think Agony tried a bit too hard to be gross.
Yeah, this is sort of similar territory for me.
Yeah.
Hey, but if you get it if you get Xbox, you basically got it for free. So, you know, fair enough.
Yeah.
And generally, I'm just looking forward to games that I haven't played before. I know that's an obvious thing. You haven't played any new game before. That's by definition. It's just when you look at sort of Spider-Man Miles Morales, I'm looking forward to playing it.
Yeah.
But I know how it plays exactly. Yeah. All I'm waiting for is the story there. So,
bizarrely enough, I mean, it's exactly the same for something like Little Nightmares. I know exactly how it's going to play, but I'm still looking forward to playing it, mainly because of the story.
Entirely different end of the spectrum, but yeah, the philosophy is exactly the same. So yes, what games are you looking forward to in 2021?
If you've liked the video, then give us a thumb, a sub, or a bell. And if you want to see more videos like this, then please support us on Patreon. The details are in the description.
Yes, we've got big plans for Patreon in 2021, but for now, that's all from Impossible Mission this week and this year. Do subscribe to keep up with all of our video game chit chat, and until next time, thanks for watching.